Welcome to the 108th Monkama Back podcast. Read the blog at moncomics.com and email us at moncast@gmail.com to leave comments and contributions. This week's books in spinning orders, discuss the news, and James spotlights Tintin again, this time in The Calculus Affair. Moncast, chock full of nuts.
It's chock full of nuts. From Ellis Island to Coney Island, chock full of nuts, tips its halo to the passion and... I don't know what the hell this is. Hi guys, how are you two?
Hi.
Around the mic tonight,
Hi, I'm James.
Oh, hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Jane.
That went really well.
I think this is going swimmingly.
Yeah, it's brilliant. We're slick as fuck now, I'll tell you.
I asked the internet a question earlier on, because I'd been listening to another podcast.
I tried to think what the internet said.
Not about comics, but I asked Twitter earlier on if it would be viable research. How much time is spent on podcasts every year? How much time and duration there is of people saying on the podcast, we'll edit that bit out, but then not actually editing that bit out. How much stuff do people say that edit out? I'll edit that bit out.
What was the response?
At least one person didn't understand me and no one else responded. No one else ever responds. Or they don't understand.
Was that Timothy Swan from the excellent Psychomedia podcast?
It was. Yeah. He's very clever and understands how brains work, but not how sentences work, it turns out.
He's been to university and everything.
I love him.
Yeah, so do I.
We've got a contribution by him this week.
Oh, excellent.
So he's definitely on. So what are we covering this week? What are we doing? What are we talking about?
I thought maybe we could talk about this week. We'd change it up a little bit. Let's talk about comics, a little bit of comic news, and then do a spotlight.
That sounds incredible.
That sounds good, yeah.
Why is Spinning Orders on there twice?
I don't know. I typed it twice. I did this in a real hurry.
So what's coming first?
Spinning Orders. I did this in a real fucking hurry today.
Yeah.
Somewhere other than here, and it might be why the script and the running order is so slapdash this week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I really ran out of time. I'm sorry.
I do appreciate how much you do.
I have other things to do. Oh, thanks a lot, guys. That's really cool.
Should we do any before right here at the beginning?
Yeah.
Should we just do any? Go and read our website. Look at new things that are on there. Contribute stuff.
Yeah,
should we do it now?
There's new stuff. We've got a new monkey writing for us, Keith, who's going to do movie reviews.
Film reviews, yes.
That's exciting. He's a very nice guy as well. I like him. You haven't met Keith, but Jane and I like him very much.
Yes, he's very nice.
Oh, is he one of your friends? He's not one of my friends.
Oh, he can be your friend too.
Oh, don't need any more friends. No, fine, whatever, I'll meet him, I don't care. Don't do me any favours.
You meet him, I feel he's one of those people, to know him is to love him.
And to know him like you do.
Yeah.
I know. God, show tunes.
I know
what's
him.
Going on?
I know
on?
Him so well. Took time to understand him.
We should mention now, because I'm really curious, we're going to keep doing the podcast anyway, because we quite...
We probably should, yeah.
We quite enjoy it.
Yeah.
But...
Some weeks.
I am... more curious about, we've got lots of people downloading, but we want people to like comment or send us messages or something, because I'm intrigued. I don't know if they're spam bots who download. Do spam bots download stuff? Does that work?
Well, I think some spam bots have a very long commute to work, don't they? So they tend to listen to podcasts.
All right, okay.
Alleviate the boredom of the commute.
So yeah, leave comments on iTunes or on the website or something.
Validate us, because we're needy motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good or bad, we don't mind.
But do it after listening.
Preferably good.
Yeah, preferably good, because you've seen how I react to bad comments. Generally a sort of downward spiral for a few weeks, where I just, I'm inconsolable, generally.
You're not soluble.
Yeah, so go to the blog. There's also, an interview John and I did with Michael Georgiou about his book Elemental Michael, which is very good.
That was mostly my fault.
And I should take much of the blame, I think, shouldn't I?
I don't really like Greeks, and I didn't want the interview up there.
That's fair enough. You can go to the interview, and there's linky links to his site and to his Facebook page.
Are those web linky links?
Linky links.
Yeah, well, that's so cute.
Yeah. And also, there's good stuff on there. Don't forget as well your date for your diary. Two things that we're doing soon is on the 3rd of December, we are doing a Twitter comic with David Made of Wynn. So I will try and write something, or I'll try and organise with the guys what we're going to do, and then we'll put something up on momcomics.com telling you how you can contribute. And on December the 22nd is Momcast Live from the beating heart of Southampton's glamorous Hanover buildings. We'll be podding, doing our Review of the Year show from Forbidden Planet. So it'd be nice if you are in the area, come to Southampton, enjoy the retail opportunities that are there for you because it's just before Christmas, and then come and sit down and watch three or four idiots talk about comics and buy a sketch off David Wynn. And maybe if we're feeling generous, we'll go and have a drink with you afterwards.
Generous makes it sound like we'll buy them.
No, I ain't buying nothing. I'm skimp, mate.
And you get to watch James be really, really nervous. He might lose control of his bladder. So just for that alone.
Almost undoubtedly, because I'm off work that day. I'm going to have an old day to worry about it.
You are a worry wart.
Work that day.
Yeah, I am off work that day. Mm. Yeah, I've got a couple of weeks off work.
Oh, yeah, of course you have.
For Christmas, isn't it?
This probably, what I'm doing now, right now, probably seems...
Using your phone, which you promised us you wouldn't do.
But I realised that I asked people... I asked people to leave us questions and stuff in a variety of different places and I haven't checked. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's brilliant. You've left the sound on as well. That's fantastic. It's adds colour now. And spice to the
Phil, for me.
I broke up a dog fight this week.
Did you? Between two dogs?
Between two dogs. I was down the park and there was this little staffy that, to be fair, the person's taken it on for the right reasons, but it took exception to Bobby, a very fluffy and cute collie cross, and he had him down and all the owners were stood around him. And I'm like, none of you are going to stop this, am I? So I had to go down and grab the staffy's collar and grab him off lovely Bobby. And I managed to do that. And then someone's German Shepherd dog lunged for him while I still had his...
Oh, my goodness.
Still had the staffy. Once... So then I had to grab the German Shepherd, by his collar and separate him from the... And
that's
then I had
the
two dogs.
Thing I've ever heard.
To be like fair, that. I thought the German Shepherd was going to bite me in the genitals. It was quite disturbing.
I don't like that. I have broken up dog fights before, and do you know what? I felt really stupid afterwards.
I felt a bit shaky afterwards. It's quite an adrenaline-pumping thing, isn't it?
It's not a good thing. I don't like it.
No, not at all. Especially when it's dogs with quite powerful bites that you're sorting out as well.
Staffies, I love them. I think they're such lovely dogs, but they are a bit scary because, you know...
They've got quite a bite. And you and I watched that Planet Dinosaur last night.
Oh, yeah.
And we freaked the fuck out.
Yeah,
they were like pterosaurs eating diplodocuses.
It was incredible.
Was it really violent?
It was quite weird. And also the whole meteor hitting the Earth.
That was depressing.
That was.
What happened in the first episode? Or is it just
the last one? No,
it
was right at the end of the Cretaceous period, I think, you'll find it happens.
Oh. That was a hell of a period.
60% of all life on the Earth was wiped out.
And what was it? Nothing over 25 kilograms.
Yeah, that survived.
Really?
Really?
What? Is that just a coincidence?
No,
or?
It's because of the collapse of the supply, the food chain.
Oh my god, chain. You can tell that a bit of
work
training.
I wanted to watch that. Was it by the same people who did the Walking with Dinosaurs?
I don't know, it's much better. Because what was nice was each scene was accompanied with evidence. So it wasn't just like, oh, we think they probably did this. It's like, well, we think they did this because we found this and this and this.
Explained it very nicely.
I like the sound of that.
But when the meteor hit the Earth, it caused the debris caused a cloud. It blocked out the sunlight, so plants died.
For months.
Yeah, for months. So the plants died, so the plant eaters died.
First.
And then, so the carnivores...
They went, oh, nom, nom, nom!
...were scavenging on them, and obviously they're so huge, their size is so big, they could not... They couldn't sustain their, you know, their bodies on what they were finding. So they died. And then small animals were able to survive on that, a mixture of that and some plant life that still survived.
That's really stressful.
To be fair, though, 150 million years, they did well, didn't they?
Yeah.
They did well. Well done to... But let's hear it for the dinosaurs, everyone.
Within months, 100% gone.
Yeah.
That's really depressing.
But we've only been about for a couple of weeks, haven't we? So we're, you know, we've got a long way to go yet.
Have I told you I don't like...
extinction events.
I really struggle with Ice Age because I already know that all of the characters are going to... Like, ultimately, they're all dead. You know that even if they survive the film, their whole species is going to be wiped out.
Okay, this could go somewhere really morbid. Have you finished tossing about with your phone yet?
I'm trying to find out if we've got any messages.
I'm going straight into spinning orders if you don't.
Oh, no, do the spinning orders.
Justice League, issue 2, DC Comics, Jeff Johns, Jim Lee, Scott Williams, $3.99.
That's a good price.
It's expensive compared to the others.
It is expensive, but it's chock full of superheroes. So, I mean, you know, you've got...
Chocked full.
Yeah, you've got some... I think you'll find... I'm sure it was the Topic adverts, and I think you'll find it was chocked full of nuts. Okay, not chock. Not chock. I think it's chocked.
Whatever.
That's what I was going for. I'm sure it was Topic. Have you not noticed that's my theme on the intros has been like retro adverts?
I did not realise that.
Oh, I've given was that game
since
away.
Is that since the beginning?
No, for a while.
Oh, okay.
Glad you noticed. Justice League 2 comes immediately after Justice League 1.
Oh.
If you're counting. And features such characters as The Flash, Superman, Batman, and the Green Lantern. Superman, Batman, Green Lantern are all having a fight. Superman, Batman, they're trying to take down Superman because Hal Jordan's ring has identified him as an alien correctly. But they're all trying to uncover the same mystery. What are the strange boxes that have been left by the guy who killed himself in the last issue? That's kind of explained later on. We also see more of Cyborg's origin. Essentially, much of the story is a superhero smackdown between Flash, Green Lantern, and Batman, and Superman, which looks great.
And that's as it should be, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then the rest of the issue is kind of a detective story trying to work out what the deal is with these boxes. I still dig the new universe. Obviously, none of the characters have met each other yet. They're still unusual and scary to the public. The armed forces are trying to suppress them because they're seen as a military threat to governments as well. It's still intriguing. I think it's well written. I enjoy the art. I find Hal Jordan's dialogue a bit wearing, but I'm not keen on...
You don't like Green Lantern.
I'm not massively keen on Green Lantern. It will stay on my spinning order, but it's certainly not my favourite of the current DC books.
Mm.
Cover art's what nice.
Else? I don't like it. Let me see.
I like the cover art.
After that quite striking first issue, it's a bit...
Do you think it's too fussy?
Yeah.
It's essentially Superman and Batman are in the foreground, Hal Jordan as Green Lantern hovering in the background, and there's some exploding chains around Superman. Green Lantern generated chains, clearly.
Why is Superman looking at us?
He's going, look at what I'm doing. I'm beating the crap out of Batman. What do you think about that, huh?
He's got a very broad chest, but he's very, very thin across.
You were talking about breaking up a dog fight. Would you break up that fight between Superman and Batman?
Oh, I'd leave them to it. They're superheroes. They can look after themselves.
Green Lantern's sorting it anyway. Yeah. It'd be all right.
Exactly.
No, I don't. I think that's weird. I don't like it.
It's fine. Also, I was going to mention very quickly, I didn't know where else to mention it. I found a new webcomic that I really like, and everyone might know it, and they go, James, you're a dickhead, but I've just started reading or catching up with SPQR Blues.
I didn't know that.
It's lovely. It's a weekly updating webcomic, which is essentially a Roman soap opera, and they're on hiatus at the moment. I recommend SPQR, obviously like the Roman standard, Blues. Go and check it out. It's a really lovely, beautifully illustrated comic, very much in the European clear line style.
So played serious, not played for laughs?
No, it's played cool. Serious. It's a Roman soap opera. It's really lovely, well-researched, beautifully drawn.
You might quite like Age of Bronze by Eric Chanova, which is about the Trojan War.
I find that period of history fascinating.
Mm.
That's my spinning order for this week.
That was quick.
Thank you. I only had one book to talk about.
Yeah.
My turn. I have Wonder Woman, the second Wonder Woman, by Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chiang.
Okay, I'll put my...
I was going to say we're going to work together.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, I'm joking.
Really good second issue.
I thought it was better.
Yes, it was actually better. You're right. Had a bit... Funny talking about Wonder Woman last week, had a bit more about her origins in this as well, how she was formed, and she's the pure Amazon because she was not made of a man's seed, so she's a pure Amazon woman.
She's an Amazonian woman.
Yeah.
Really? Did she get born because of the midichlorians or something? I don't know. How does that work?
It's possible. It's possible that's just a story.
Yeah, last week. Yeah, you told us last week.
It's interesting. It's interesting. I don't think that's been her origin for a little. I think this is new, isn't it? It might have been her origin originally, but I think for a while, I don't think there's been all this stuff about this stuff.
I don't think so.
Go on.
I was just going to say, it's really nice for a new reader, especially if they've jumped in on this. It's got a bit more about her background. Really good story. The first issue was good, but this is, as Nick said, a lot better. It's going somewhere. You're really interested in it. A lot of sibling rivalry in this, which is unexpected. Definitely sort of a good old good against bad tale. So this is going to be quite interesting to see how it plays out.
The art's great.
Really coming around to his art. I really liked the art in the first issue, but I was a bit iffy about Wonder Woman just because I hadn't seen her drawn this way. It's quite unique to the styles I'd seen so far. I mean, there's other styles that I haven't really explored, but it was quite unique. So yeah, it was really good. So if you're not picking it up, go back and get one and two. It's really good.
Really nice, solid, bold lines. If you're in Southampton, they seem to still have quite a few copies of number one.
I think they got... I don't know if it's left over from the first run.
I think it might be,
The second...
Are you sure they're not second printings?
Might be second printings.
Second printings came out the other week, didn't they?
I can't remember if Wonder Woman completely sold out, though. I think it did.
Could be. There were quite a few of them.
Hey, collectors, don't forget to check which printing you're buying with these DC number ones. You still see them on the shelf.
And you're part of the problem.
Well, no, it's nice to have a first edition, first issue, isn't
it? I know,
it?
I'm talking to you. I've been cataloguing my comics a little bit recently. I've had to check that a few times, and I always feel a little bit guilty that I'm pleased when I've got a first edition of something quite unusual.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all, you know, because we all like reading... Sorry, Jane, I'm interrupting your spinning order.
It's okay.
We all like reading them because we dig the stories, but it's also the collecting aspect. It's nice to have something that potentially has some rarity to it. It's, you know,
part of the value is to you, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't go mad for the collecting. You've seen how I look after my comics at home, but it's nice, isn't it?
The second book I'm going to talk about is Batman by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, and I said his name wrong. Jonathan Galpian, yeah.
Sorry.
Really good second issue. Story's developing quite nicely. The new mayor of Gotham, or the soon-to-be mayor of Gotham, quite an interesting character, gets on really well with Bruce Wayne, and you want to know why. There's nothing to lead you to think that he wouldn't want to be a friend with him or work with him have some kind of connection with him, but you just think, why? You're just instantly suspicious of him, and I just think that Scott Snyder's writing is really good in the sense that it always brings something else. You always have, with the characters, you always get a sense that something isn't what it seems without giving too much away. So,
do you think Bruce Wayne's friends with him because he thinks something's up, or do you think that in the story there's going to be he trusts someone and they turn out to be...
Well, they're just sort of getting to know each other. It's just how forward he is with Bruce Wayne and how much he wants to work with him. It just leaves you a little bit suspicious. It could be nothing, but it's nice to have that kind of intrigue of, are they who they, you know, are they really what they seem? Lots of fighting in this one, lots of mystery in this one. A really cool autopsy scene as well. The art's excellent. I do have a bit of an issue with some of the people looking very similar, even if they're not related. But I think that's a bit of a thing
in the first issue as well.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think that's just his art style, and I'm not going to knock it because I really like it. So yeah, I can't believe I'm enjoying Batman. I know that sounds really weird and horrible, but
I understand.
I just never thought I would. I like the Batman films. I just didn't think I'd like Batman as
comics. James is making lots of faces. But
I
noticed that he didn't cover a Batman comic this week.
I didn't pick it up. I only picked up one book this week because it's payday next week and I didn't really have the money to pick up all of my spinning order. But thanks for bringing it up, Nick.
That's okay.
Is it hard at home at the moment?
Oh, like you wouldn't believe, man. It's really pinching.
I wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, George Osborne's moved in.
Oh, God.
With Liam Fox and Andrew Werity. And I tell you, they're eating me out of house and home.
Oh, those greedy bastards.
Yeah, well, it's all right. Liam Fox is all right because he's only tiny.
Is he Dr. Fox?
Yes.
Is that the same person?
Yeah, it's the same one.
No.
Yeah.
The one who used to be on the radio.
Yeah, 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 same person.
No.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Believe me, Nick.
What do you think,
Believe
Jane?
Me, Nick.
No, it's not the same
I'm
one.
Not bulimic.
I'm the one telling the truth.
Oh, believe me, Nick. So one of you is always telling the truth and the other one always lies.
One of us has always admitted to telling white lies, Nick. So,
That's
and the
true.
Other one is Jane.
And the other one has never admitted to telling white lies, but might tell white lies anyway. Yeah. So one of you is honest.
The honest one would say to you, Nick, Google it and find out for yourself.
Wouldn't the honest one say to me, I tell white lies when he's told white lies?
Yes.
This is too confusing, you guys. Can I do my comments?
Yes.
Right, well, I read Wonder Woman and I liked it. Also, very, very briefly, Journey into Mystery, Fear Itself, 629, which was good, but it was the last part of a story arc and was good. And Invincible Iron Man, I think I might move to trades with Invincible Iron Man. It was okay, but I don't know. And all of the Fear Itself books are really Fear Itself-y this month.
Okay.
Like, you can't even pretend they're not part of a bigger thing. So there was a nice preview that I read a bit of for Wolverine and the X-Men today, and I wasn't going to buy it, but I think I might have to now because the art's really pretty. Also, Near Death. This seems to have come around really quickly. Is this chair squeaking more than usual?
No. Carry on.
Yes. Near Death number 2, $2.99 by J. Ferber, Simone Giglielmini, and Ron Reilly. I'd probably pronounce that completely wrong.
You sounded a quagmire for a second. That was very odd.
With cover art by Tom Coker and Daniel Friedman, which is the stuff's lovely as always. First issue of this doesn't seem to have been that long ago. It's like crime, basically a crime story about an assassin who has a near-death experience, thinks he sees a potentially not very good afterlife that's ready for him, and decides he's going to stop killing people.
Yeah.
And is going to start stopping people dying. But he's a really interesting character. I said this in the first issue, and this comes through in this again. The real wrinkle is he's not had a 360. He's not trying to save people and not kill people because he's suddenly a good person. He's very mercenary about
it.
He's
really selfish,
I really don't want to. Yeah. That's put to the test in this one because the guy, there's a little bit of a cold open, like a James Bond style cold open, where you see the very end of a previous story in the first few pages, which is quite cool, which kind of just gives you the indication that after the last issue, which was pretty much an origin, he's like carried on. He's been doing a few of these things. The character work on him is really good because he is just still a bit of an asshole. His moral code hasn't changed or anything. But the story that the person who he ends up being charged with stopping from dying, there's the moral ambiguity that he has kind of. His new stance on life is tested in this. The validity of it is tested because the guy he's trying to stop dying maybe isn't that great a person, sort of thing. The art's really, the writing's really nice and solid. The art really reminds me of Al Williamson. It's just really sort of like real and evocative and nice. I don't really know how else to describe it.
It is nice. It's the first issue I really really enjoyed, so I'm looking forward to picking up the second one to see what happens. But yeah, you're right, the art's it's atmospheric, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very good with the story.
There's a couple of
It looks a bit like Sean Phillips.
Slightly,
But Al Williamson, the characters are kind of slightly thinner and less stylized, but no, he is. I mean, the thing about Sean Phillips is his art's more realistic than most artists, so that's the easiest comparison.
Yeah.
But yeah, he kind of, there's a couple of pages as well that are set in the fog. It's kind of a couple of scenes in cars in the fog, and it's just really
so much.
Yeah, me too. But it's really good. I really liked it. And only $2.99, it's also, this was one of the books a friend of mine asked me, who really likes The Walking Dead, who's James, who was on the show a while back, asked me what other books he might like. He only really reads The Walking Dead, but he has enjoyed other books in the past. And Near Death was on the list. So
was it you that's got him onto Batman Year One?
Maybe.
Because he's reading that today.
Oh, no, that not recently, it wasn't.
Oh, right. Good.
But I might have mentioned it before. I also bought 2000 AD. It continues to be fun. I'm still not really sure about, because I've never really gotten on with Simon Davis's art, so I'm still not really sure about Anthony Krukis.
I'm really enjoying that story. I know what you say about the art. They're very, it's very still snapshots. Mm. There isn't a lot of movement in the art. I kind of dig it. It looks different, and the story's mental.
Mm. And Angel Zero, I've really enjoyed John Byrne's art in the past. I'm not sure about it at the moment in this, because the story seems a bit all over the place.
It's another one I'm quite enjoying as well. I'm really digging.
Well, that's the good thing about it being an anthology book. But Low Life is still lovely, and Indigo Prime came back this week. Cool. We're past all of the trying to establish. It's really weird because they had that little arc beforehand, which was obviously trying to establish the characters or re-establish the characters. But because the Indigo Prime universe and milieu is so fucked up, it really just seemed like a surreal... It was lovely, but you didn't really understand what was going on.
Nothing went on for about 5 weeks.
But this is kind of straight in at the beginning of another really interesting story with like really big ideas in it. And it's cool. Actually, Near Death, one thing I wanted to mention is I hadn't made the connection when I read the last one, but it's not dissimilar in premise to a new show that's on at the moment called Person of Interest.
Okay.
Which stars one of the guys from Lost, and who he played Jesus in something, I think.
The Bible.
He played Jesus in Mel Gibson's thing, and I can't remember what his name is. Anyway, him. I think it's him. And that's good. That's worth checking out, especially if you like Near Dark. And if you like that, it's worth... Not Near Dark, Near Death. And if you liked that programme, Near Death might be good too, and that's that.
Something else that I wanted to mention, American Vampire Survival of the Fittest, the mini series from the main American Vampire run finished last week, and it was amazing, by Scott Schneider and Sean Murphy.
Yeah.
Hoping there's a trade going to come out, please, everyone just go and check it out. It was just such a good story. I just think everyone should read that, so because I read it at the weekend, so I wanted to mention it.
You made me think, actually. I just wanted to mention something I've noticed over the last few days. I haven't read any of them yet. But have you noticed that Vertigo have almost completely shifted their... They seem to be bringing out an awful lot of original graphic novels, genuinely one-off stories or something.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if maybe, although Hellblazer I think is still coming out, but I'm not sure, there might just have been one left on the shelf. But I wonder if they've quietly actually changed it, so Vertigo might still exist, but it might literally be for new...
We spoke a while ago about it feels like Vertigo are winding down, so maybe it is. Maybe it's just going to be for original graphic novels, and
which wouldn't be a bad thing necessarily if they make sure they're good and they still publicise them across the rest of the DC line.
Yeah, and I guess we had a conversation as well. Is Image feel like they're doing the job that I wanted Vertigo to do anyway, in terms of the sort of titles that are coming out? So
actually, I wonder what. There's a new book advertised by Nathan Edmondson, advertised by Image, written by Nathan Edmondson, who did who is Jake Ellis, that finished the other week.
That looks very cool.
That looks really cool. Called The Activity. The best thing about Image at the moment, well, not the best thing, but have you noticed how, I don't know if when you were growing up, James, because this will have been more a thing for you, when you were a kid and comics were kind of things that you only found... like out of sequence normally, American comics, you'd see adverts in a Marvel or a DC book for other comics and they'd look like, fucking hell, that looks amazing.
Yeah, totally.
I will never get to see that, and it looks like these amazing artifacts. And at the moment, as much as I'm loving the Image books, nearly the back of nearly every one is kind of, there is at least one book that I really want to see, sort of thing. And most of them haven't been disappointing at all.
No, they've been really good.
So
I think it's been Image's year. DC 52, I think it's been Image's year.
Definitely.
Their batting average has been outstanding. We'll talk about that more on the 22nd, when you can see Momcast live in Forbidden Planet in Southampton. There you go. That was
live.
live.
Hang on. I've kind of only vaguely been paying attention. When you say live, we're going to be in it.
Yeah.
And we're going to be recording and we're going to be alive while we're recording. But we're going to be here.
No, we're going to be at Forbidden Planet. You can come and watch us.
But we're all going to... I'm going to be there.
You're going to be there too. Whether you like it or not, you're going to be there.
And there are going to be other people there.
There are going to be other people there looking at us. So we're probably shut down and it'll be Jane talking on her own in front of a group of strangers.
I hadn't really considered exactly what it was you were saying. I was just doing that thing I normally do of nodding and smiling.
Yeah.
That sounds terrifying.
That's really backfired on you this time.
Yeah, it really has. Shit. Yeah. Okay, but I'm not drawing the comic, though.
No, you're not drawing the comic.
Good, okay, good.
David, and that's on the 3rd of December, not on the 22nd of December.
Okay.
God, I feel really sorry for you listening. You've got weeks of listening to us talking about these
events. We should talk about this, perhaps, and not on the pod.
Well, no, we should talk about it on the pod too, so we've got to keep pimping it, Jane.
Maybe, we'll keep pimping it,
listen to, like, more professional podcasts. They're always going, oh, you can buy our T-shirt from this site, and they say it for weeks, or Baston, Silent Bob and Jay are coming to eat your dope and smoke your fridge, or something like that.
Do you only, you really listen to all of the Kevin Smith podcasts?
I'd listen to some of them. I don't listen to all of them, by any.
How many are there?
Oh, God, there must be like 20 or 30 regular ones at the moment.
News Ambush!
News Ambush. It was New York Comic Con last week.
Was that good? Where was that?
That was in New York, New York.
Oh, in America.
So good they named it twice. But only really because it's like the city and the state. They haven't really named it twice.
No, they haven't. It's just an accident of they weren't very imaginative when they named the state.
Not really. That's because, you know, they were busy doing other things, I expect.
Building,
yeah. Building the wonderful nation that is the United States of America. And
standing on top of really high up bits of scaffolding without any sort of safety equipment.
And if they hadn't have built New York, then we wouldn't have a podcast. Because that's where the comic industry traditionally was based. Hanging off clocks. Harold Lloyd. Good. Yes,
that's another thing.
Yeah.
Bored to Death's back.
Yeah, I don't think that was New York.
Was it not?
I suspect it's probably Los Angeles, where the film industry was based.
Oh, I don't think we need to quibble about these things. It was all America.
Yeah, so lots of news came out of New York Comic Con.
New York Comic Con.
Absolutely. And if you go to Bleeding Cool or if you go to,
some other website. CBR, somewhere else.
Yeah, they all summarise what happened. It's really good.
Did you have any other news?
Nothing of any great...
And after you threatened to kill unicorns or whatever.
Sorry? Yeah, no, I was going to say about Little Terrors in a second. I ain't stop riffing about New York Comic Con, but I really appreciate you helping me out, buddy. No, I appreciate it. I'm going to talk about Little Terrors in a minute. Yeah. It's fine.
You two quite dumb.
nothing of any great significance really leapt out at me from New York.
Did nothing
Comic-Con.
Get announced? Well, I mean, it's...
There were, but nothing sort of really grabbed me in the headlines. There was some stuff about Marvel TV programs that look like that. That's quite cool if they're going to start going into producing TV. Yeah, real programs.
I mean, live action.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's cool if they're going to start doing that. Good.
That would be nice.
Yeah, and stuff. I didn't pick up what
You're
this...
You're really underwhelmed by it, aren't you?
Yeah, Christine went from the Other Murdoch Papers.
Did she?
Yeah,
and she's got a new writer on there as well. She should go to the Other Murdoch Papers and read...
Aaron, isn't it?
Aaron, that's right, yeah.
Ah.
Which is really cool. That's good for her.
Andy Diggle's exclusive contract at Marvel... is up, so if you've got work for Andy Diggle, I think it was Andy Diggle. If you've got work for Andy Diggle,
well, John and I have been noodling around. Maybe you can help us with that.
What?
We've got a premise of a story. You could write it for us.
Yeah, you could write it.
Because me and John are never going to get the fucker written, are we? Let's be honest.
Daffy Duck died.
Oh, God.
That's more cartoons.
Commiserations to Daffy.
Well, his family, really.
And the family,
the Duck family.
Yeah. Commiserations to the
Ducks. Not related to Donald and Daisy.
Which is weird, isn't it? But there was a girl on University Challenge this week with the same surname as me, came from the same part of the world that my family moved to. It's not where the name originates. We're not related. So it happens.
University Challenged, more like.
Yeah, so I rooted for her team.
Uh-huh. Was she hot, though?
No, but also because she had the same surname as mine, and it's relatively uncommon, I didn't really want to have an opinion on her in that way, just in case.
You know that Daffy Duck and Daisy Duck actually had a fling before, so if they had been related, it would have all been a bit weird.
Ooh.
She's from a third duck family, even though she's married to Donald.
To be fair, I think if you study the sexual peccadilloes of ducks, they're not a...
I don't think they're fussy.
No, they're quite... It's not pleasant duck life.
I read the full version of The Ugly Duckling this week, for reasons I won't go into. It's long, and it's quite depressing.
Is it as long and depressing as a Silmarillion?
No, well, I don't know, I haven't read the Silmarillion, but I have read The Ugly Duckling.
I've read the Silmarillion. Who's the best?
You decide,
listener.
Tolkien or Hans Christian Andersen?
Yeah, probably Hans Christian Andersen on this occasion.
Any other news?
Fucking mess of Silmarillion. Yes.
What's happening with Little Terrors?
John Scribbins is rebooting back to number one on the 31st of October. John said something on Twitter to me, and he said, live on the 31st of October, it's rebooting. So you have to get yourself to Little Terror's website on the 31st of October and find out what we're talking about. So I said, dude, send me more deets. That sounds intriguing.
Deets? Complete
deets, because that's how we talk, us trendy young kids on the internet. That's how we talk to each other.
Right, okay.
Yeah, dude, send me some deets, man, and then we can go out on our skateboards.
Okay, right.
Yeah. He didn't get back to me.
He didn't get back to
me. So he probably doesn't want to go out skateboarding with me, I think, really.
No.
Which is fair enough, because I'm quite fat and unbalanced.
My problem with skateboards is they go backwards as well as forwards, so I always end up on my front, and bigger boys laugh.
Yeah, like I've never been any good at skateboarding. Jane, skateboarder?
I was okay.
Cool.
But so he's rebooting. Is that a hard reboot? Or soft? Is the continuity going back to zero?
I don't think he finds it hard. I think he enjoys the process.
You're an idiot, Hole.
He's waiting for more details. Nick.
Deets.
Yeah, deets. That's what that means.
This is preliminary news. As more comes in, James will share it with you.
Sorry if I've got to do old man talking for you now.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Okay. What? It means details. Don't you know, old boy?
Not old posh man.
Oh, I don't know.
Jeez,
posh.
Talk like a cockney.
All right.
Like a barrow boy.
I'll
understand then.
Okay.
God bleeding blimey.
Mary Poppins, it means that some such. It means details, don't it? There are details and some what. Let's go down Red Line for a couple of pints and threaten the ape right.
Oh. Threaten the ape right?
Yeah. Ape right, yeah. It's like a threaten the upright, but with an ape.
And that's how I got HIV, kids.
That is true. That's how it happened, yeah. In the East End of London, because people were having ape-ney threat nights.
Really? Yeah. Is that what that's all about?
That's right, yeah. Read it. It's in your science book. Dawkins wrote about it. Timothy Swan, Timothy Swan, he'll break your arm, break your arm, with his bloody great wing.
That's right, it's me, one half of Felon Swan, which is one mishearing by Graham Johnson away from being paltry duo Swan and Fowl, who are a 70s duo like Cannon and Bull. As you may know, I'm an absurd fan of Star Wars, and especially of the Expanded Universe. Try reading the novelisation of Episode 3 sometime, and realise that Matthew Stover can make anything good. Anyway, on the 26th of October, 12 and a half years since the last instalment, Crimson Empire 3 Issue 1 comes out. I plan to review that, having done a retrospective of Crimson Empire 1 and 2 this week and next week. Crimson Empire came out in late 1997, when I was 8 years old and first getting into Star Wars. The special edition of A New Hope, which I saw in the cinema and it blew me away, was that Easter. The Expanded Universe had been in full swing for about 5 years, and indeed Crimson Empire 2 finished just as The Phantom Menace was released, and a couple of months before Bantam stopped doing Star Wars books, which suggests how late in that stage it came. I read it in the trade paperback from the library. One day, I'll tell you all about how much I love comics from the library, primarily Asterix, Tintin and Star Wars. Crimson Empire must have been one of the early ones I read, because I read it years before I read Dark Empire, to which it is most closely linked. In Dark Empire, the Emperor returns in a series of mad clones, which is a very superhero comic story for Star Wars. He is defeated because those clones get progressively weaker. Crimson Empire looks at the Empire just as it suffered the fatal blow of losing the Emperor for the final time. One man, Carnor Jax, a former Royal Guard, you know, the red ones from Return of the Jedi, has taken control of what remains, heading the Imperial Council. A mysterious stranger appears on an Imperial fringe world, making light work of stormtroopers and Imperial officers. The Rebel Alliance, well, the New Republic, there, takes him in. Carnor Jax is desperately searching for Kirkanos, who is this mysterious stranger, who he believes could bring down the Empire single-handedly. They were both Imperial guards who trained together at the brutal academy that made elite warriors of the top Imperial soldiers. Kirkanos expresses his thoughts in voiceover caption boxes, and each episode has flashback to his trainings, establishing the connection between him and Jax. Kanos joins up with the rebels, most notably their leader, Mirif Sin, in order to evade the local Imperial searching for him, and their hidden base is swiftly betrayed. This bit probably has my favourite art of the series, because it's a classic Star Wars ground battle. Walkers, TIE fighters, the lot. And Kirkanos, in resplendent red armour for the first time, appears to help them. It does a lot to establish how hardcore a character he is. The sort of anti-hero that Star Wars doesn't really have that many of. Han Solo is a bit too heroic, really. Kanos is an Imperial with everything that entails, but you can't help but root for him as he calmly brings down a TIE Interceptor with a single blaster shot. Kanos explains afterwards his motivations. That many of the Imperial guards had died in the war with the rebels, that the Emperor's doctor had been paid to mess up his clone so he'd finally die, that Carnor Jax was responsible, really, for the death of the Emperor, the ultimate treachery of any Imperial guard. The rest of the guards were wiped out by a surprise attack, and Kanos is the only one who remains to fight for vengeance. This part of the story is drawn from the tale of the 47 Ronin, and the arc words, thus style traitors, recur throughout the series. Thematically, there are rebels betraying rebels, and Imperials betraying Imperials. And the series builds to an inevitable duel between Kanos and Jax in the same arena where they duelled in training. When Mirif Sin intervenes, her second-in-command and best friend is killed by Kanos, and she swears vengeance upon him. Kanos, with a face scarred by Vader's lightsaber, has a classic hard-bitten look. Mirif Sin, the female leader of the rebels, is drawn rather over-sexualized, which I didn't notice when I first read it, as is the wont of many comics. But in terms of how she's written, she's capable, authoritative, and brave. The art is immensely authentic. Nothing feels out of place in the galaxy far, far away. Ships, vehicles, aliens. And it helps that the story is written by the head of Star Wars at Dark Horse, Randy Stradley. As I've already mentioned, the story works very well in terms of looping destinies, and the comic is so action-packed it's not hard to see why it thrilled me as a Star Wars-obsessed 9- or 10-year-old. It still thrills me to this day. I've not changed that much. So, you can buy the whole collection of 6 issues for $10 on Dark Horse Digital, or the book for about £8 or £9 on Amazon. I really recommend it, because it's very accessible to those not engaged in the expanded universe, has great action, characters and structure, and it gives a rare, sympathetic, but not morally good, Imperial. Next week I'll review the second book in the trilogy, Crimson Empire 2, Council of Blood. Thanks for all the psychomedia mentions. I've just got to figure out how to brainwash Nick into listening now. Bye-bye.
I wonder how big my mouth can go.
I don't want to... Quite big. Nick's opening his mouth really wide. That's working really well on the podcast.
Is that for... Is that
were you yawning?
The...
Were you pretending not to yawn? Were you yawning? Were you yawning and go, oh, right, shit, I don't want to admit I'm yawning, so I'm just going to pretend that I'm trying to work out how wide my mouth can go.
I'm just going to
check... I fucking rumble you, sunshine.
I'm just going to check our messages again.
Okay, that's fine. Just see if anyone said anything to us.
What
me and Jay meant to do.
Did you have any more news?
I ain't got any more news,
Well, then...
Do spotlight.
Yeah.
Well, no, because then you're into fucking interrupt with a message.
Well, we'll just ignore him.
And, oh, got a big mouth. Look at my big mouth.
No, if we've got any messages, we'll do it at the end. I'm just trying to make all the boys like me. There's no chance that's going to happen.
I'm very excited. Nicola and I don't go out.
Oh, hate me.
Don't go out very often anymore because... because we took the decision that we wanted to start a family, and you have to not go out as much as you used to.
She's old enough to look after herself now, though, isn't she?
Not quite. Almost. A couple of years. So we're going to get a babysitter. I don't know if she's tapped me up yet. I'm joking. We're going to go out next Friday, and Nicola is going to take me out for a nice meal at the newly opened Chiquitos, the Mexican restaurant. It's opened up again. Lovely. Chimichanga. Very nice. And then I'm going to... go and watch Tintin with her. She's taking me to see the new Tintin film next Friday.
Netflix. That's quite cool. I'm just... Is that an ABBA-themed place?
No, it's...
Isn't it Chiquitica?
No, it's Chiquitos.
It's Mexican restaurant, isn't it?
The one that was on fire, and then they put it out, and then it was all
again,
broken. Yeah.
But
it's open again
they
now.
They fixed it.
I know it's like the McDonald's of like, sit-down restaurants, but I like it.
I don't know. It sounds lovely. I just... I'm confused.
It's not. I like it.
And Tintin's out this weekend. I haven't seen the new trailer. Is it good?
Yeah, it looks really good. I got really annoyed by the... There is a review on the Guardian website by someone who purports to be a massive Tintin fan.
What are they called?
I forget his name, which is probably just as well.
No, I mean Tintinologists, yeah?
He purports to be a Tintinologist. But he dropped the... it was like... I don't want to say it, because it's horrible.
Do you mean to say it? He said it was like being raped.
He said it's okay because he's been raped. I'm quoting South Park, but he was really negative about it. But then he made some really weird, ludicrous statements, like Explorers on the Moon was scientifically accurate, despite being 15 years before the actual moon landings. Now, there's a lot of really good science in Explorers on the Moon, but they find massive deposits of ice there. You know, I mean, it's not
there's.
Completely
There's a lot
on,
wrong with you know? Everything you've told me about this review. I'm glad I haven't read it.
But what he doesn't seem to understand is he said it was dizzyingly fast-paced, which makes me believe he hasn't read any of the early Tintin stories. And he says it's too fantastic. It's like, suspension of disbelief is quite important in a lot of stories, and there are Tintin
especially
books.
Tintin stuff.
There are. Well, he said that it's very couched in reality, and it is to a certain extent, but... You have to suspend disbelief when you're reading
Tintin. It's about a boy reporter going on adventures around the world.
I don't think he's read The Seven Crystal Balls, for example, or Flight 714, where a UFO helps Tintin and his party to escape.
We're about 4 years off people who grew up as kids reading reviews about adaptations where someone claimed they raped their childhood.
Yeah.
Where those people can claim that Guardian reviewers saying that are raping their childhood.
It's a phrase that really annoys me. I really hate it. I think it's insensitive. I think it's a stupid thing to say.
It's out of...
Sorry.
But it's also overplayed among fandom anyway. And for someone who's actually getting paid to do a review to say it is a bit lazy.
Mm. I love Tintin books. I love Tintin.
I know.
And nothing that happens in that movie next Friday... will take a single one of these books away from me.
They can't take that away from you.
Will detract any of my enjoyment because, you know, Jane and I have seen a bad Tintin film.
Well, it's not like it's
it
never been done, is it?
Me in any
but
kind
I
of
still
way.
Love the books.
Yeah. Mm.
And it is. Blue Oranges is a bit pooey.
Yeah, it is. But it's not. It didn't offend me. I didn't undo any Tintin.
And it didn't make The Calculus Affair any less enjoyable to read when I read it this week for this upcoming review.
Has The Guardian always been like that?
No.
No, it used
because
to be in Manchester.
When I was at university, I kind of always thought, oh, that's a proper paper with proper people writing for it, but it's just embarrassing. Now.
The guy made an idiot of himself in the review. I suggest you go and read it and then leave a comment below saying, dude, you're an idiot.
Hmm. Anyway, so this book, which one are you doing?
The Calculus Affair, which was published in Tintin magazine between 1954 and 1956, according to Wikipedia, and then was published as a single volume translated in the UK in 1960. It is preceded by Explorers on the Moon, which had seen quite a run of massive stories, really, starting from maybe The Shooting Star, through Secret the Unicorn, Red Rackham's Treasure, Seven Crystal Balls, Prisoner of the Sun, then on to Land of the Black Gold and the two Moon books. The subjects were huge and sprawling and out of this world and quite fantastic as well. The Calculus Affair is the closest you're going to get in the entire Tintin run to a detective story.
Mm.
It starts very quietly as well, with Captain Haddock declaring to Tintin that he's done with exploring and adventuring.
Oh, my God.
And he's had enough, so they're just having a...
He's hanging up his pipe.
He's hanging up his pipe when a rainstorm forces him back to Marlinspike and windows and mirrors mysteriously start breaking.
Yeah.
Initially, they think this is just a storm, but as a character that we've come to know and maybe love... As the books go on, Jolyon Wagg turns up. The insurance salesman turns up more of these mysterious glass-breaking incidents begin to happen. A whiskey glass goes, a chandelier goes.
I imagine Haddock isn't happy about the whiskey glass.
He's not blistering barnacles. He's quite cross about it.
Yeah.
Towards the end of this scene, we see a couple of ne'er-do-wells in the grounds of Marlin Spike.
I love when he does the Tintin reviews because he starts talking in a really like quaint way. Ne'er-do-wells.
I'm hoping I don't effing Jeff too much during the Tintin reviews, and then we can edit them all together and put them out as a family-friendly podcast.
Effing and Jeffing.
Effing and Jeffing. That's a podcast that we're going to do as a branch off from Momcast as well. Effing and Jeffing with James. And it's just going to be 15 minutes weekly of me swearing.
That sounds good.
Effing right.
Can I be on as a guest and I can swear? I'm good.
Yeah,
at
totally. You can all come on it. It's fine.
We can all come on
occasionally.
It.
Oh dear, I have to edit that out.
Yeah.
So they find a body in the grounds who disappears. The police are called, and this is where for me, I was saying about suspension of disbelief, right?
Mm.
The police, who are local to Marlin Spike, turn up to attend this supposed shooting, and remember, Cuthbert Calculus is the scientist who's behind the moon landings.
Yeah.
Tintin is the reporter who famously went on the moon landings. Okay, so Haddock's telling the police officer about his friend Calculus, and the policeman says, "And who, pray, is Calculus?"
So he doesn't know.
Fuck me, it's a scientist who went to the moon. He lives in the town you come from. What sort of policeman are you?
Maybe he's not from that region.
But he looks like he is. And then
what does that mean?
I don't know. And then he goes, "And who is Tintin?" I was sat there reading it. Actually, I was lying down, reading it.
Maybe he doesn't read.
Maybe they thought he was lying and they had to check he actually knew who they were.
They didn't have the internet back then.
That's true. He must read a newspaper James Theory. Or something. I just found it hard to believe that the policeman who operates in the environs of Marlin Spike Hall.
Maybe it was a double bluff.
It might have been.
Did you actually read it the other night, or are you reading it a page in advance of telling us about it? And is it possible he turns out to be a baddie?
Get chiffed. No, no, he definitely isn't. What follows on page 10 is one of my favourite examples of Hergé's sequential storytelling ability. There is a lovely scene where Haddock comes into the bathroom. He's about to do his morning ablutions, brushes his teeth, and his mirror shatters, much to his surprise. It's about half a page, but it's just beautiful. Wordless piece of storytelling. I absolutely adore it. It's really struck out. It was when I was reading it again the other night, I just went back to it over and over again and just enjoyed it.
He's brushing his teeth.
And all he's doing is brushing his teeth and the mirror breaks, but it's lovely.
Mm.
So this glass breaking continues, which causes a crowd to appear outside Marlin Spike Hall, which is a bit of a Where's Wally picture because Hergé and Edgar P. Jacobs both appear. In this picture, Edgar P. Jacobs, if you're not sure who he is the guy who invented Blake Mortimer.
Oh. Is Doctor Who in there?
Doctor Who's not in there.
That's not the first time they've cameoed in those, is it?
Hergé tends to cameo in his books. I've been rewatching the Nelvana Tintin series recently, and Hergé appears in every single one of those at some point. But it's quite funny. I hadn't noticed this until rewatching it again. You can't really tell it's Canadian. Tintin's got this very sort of mid-Atlantic accent until he says the word out or about.
About.
Who snooey? Shall we go oot and aboot?
That's fantastic. Brilliant.
It is fantastic.
Did Asterix turn up in a crowd scene in one of them?
That's Tintin and the Picrows.
There was, yeah, I thought so. So me saying, oh, is Asterix in there in the crowd scene would actually just be stupid.
No, Hergé's got form. But I was trying to look while we were talking. I was trying to find Hergé in it. I can't find him, which is annoying me a little bit. Anyway, Calculus leaves for a conference in Geneva, and the glass shattering has stopped. So Tintin and Haddock decide to investigate in his laboratory when they uncover a ne'er-do-well. Another ne'er-do-well who punches out Haddock and Snowy, but they find a key.
He punches Snowy.
He does, yeah. He smacks Snowy right in the mush.
Shit.
Yeah. He goes down like a bag of potatoes. But they find a packet of cigarettes and they find a key, which they find out, I can't remember how they work out where the keys, no, they work out it's for a hotel near where Calculus is staying in Geneva. So after, no, so I tell a lot, I'm lying, the hotel name's written on the cigarette packet. So that's how they work out, that's where the keys from.
Did the thief drop a cigarette packet?
I said that.
Sorry,
you should listen back, because I definitely said that.
No, I'm sure you did. I'm just confused.
Thanks for being present. I know these reviews are very boring. I'm sorry.
I was too stunned and flabbergasted by the whole punching a dog thing. That freaked me out.
It's not a real dog. It's just Snowy.
How can you say that?
Because, look, you know, again, you have to suspend disbelief. The stories start in the 1930s. The final one...
Don't say it.
...ends in the 70s, right?
Don't say it.
Oh, no, James, shut up. No, I don't want to hear about this.
Don't say it, just carry on.
How many times would Snowy have died?
No, don't.
Between the first story and the final one.
Does Haddock just keep replacing him with a dog that looks really like him?
I mean, if you'd met Alpha, which happens in the 80s, I mean, there must have been about, you know, a dozen dogs.
How does Tintin not... Yeah, okay, good point.
Yeah, because he's quite a detective, Tintin. You'd think he'd tweak that.
Well, do you think emotionally he's just trying not to think about it?
Maybe. Maybe if he thought about it too much, he'd just go oot of his mind. So they turn up...
Is that a bit racist?
No, it's xenophobic at most.
Oh, okay. A boast.
No, but that's how Tintin talks. Let's go oot to the hockey. Turn up at the hotel, but they just miss Calculus. He has gone to Neon to visit someone, and they miss the train. So they enter into some adventures trying to get there. They get in a taxi, and they get driven off the road by a black Citroen 5.
Wow.
That age is it?
Does it? I don't
know. Yeah. Citroen 5, all that age is it? Don't get those anymore. And it crashes into a pond. Maybe even Lake Geneva. We don't know.
Lake Geneva or a pond?
Yeah, we just don't know at this point.
Okay.
There is a lovely scene where they're all surfacing. Tintin obviously rescues the slightly Hitlery looking taxi driver.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tintin is saved by... He's moonlighting as a taxi driver. Obviously, I mean, it makes sense, though, that Hitler would move to Switzerland to be closer to his gold.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And a swan saves Snowy from drowning. They manage to get a... they leave the taxi driver with the crowd that have gathered, leave their names for the police, and convince someone to drive them to Neil, where they are almost... run over again by the black Citroen 5, which ages the story, admittedly.
What is this black Citroen 5 all about?
It's there. Well, it's full of Bordovians.
Oh.
Spies who are trying to kill them, because they know that they're on to them. At this point as well, page 22, if you look very carefully, it's some invisible amending, where my daughter tried to rip the bloody page out.
Actually, that's quite a seamless mending.
It's not bad, is it?
Really good, she needs to learn.
She really needs to think about what her priorities in life are.
She needs to check herself before she wrecks herself.
I think she needs to focus less on ripping, more on reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wiggity wiggity whack.
It is. Check it out. Living and learning, laughing and living.
What?
Don't know.
Okay.
They turn up at the scientist's house. There's no one to be seen, but he does have a book of German research in World War II. By Leslie E. Simon, which is a real book, ladies and gentlemen.
Is it? That's real research, but...
It's a real book. And they find a picture of...
Have you read it?
No. They find a picture of a sound weapon similar to the thing they found in Cuthbert's laboratory before the hoodlum escaped. So there's a cigarette, same brand as the packet they found dropped out of the hoodlum's pocket in the ashtray, and they hear some clanging. And the professor they've come to see... he's tied up in the basement. He thinks Calculus did it. Tintin's like, well, that's unlikely, because Calculus is a little bloke, for starters, and he's quite peaceful. Unlikely it's him that did it. So they let him talk it out. You know, even though they say he's friends of Calculus, he's prepared to share wine and talk to them.
Yeah.
And then he goes, is this him? And he shows him a picture, and he goes, that's not Calculus.
Well,
you want Calculus who did your inmate. It's someone else. It's an intruder.
That guy... Yeah. He was just falsely accusing calculus. That is not on.
That's right. And then the house blows up.
Does it?
Yeah. Then the Thompsons randomly turn up. And to be honest, well, it is a bit random. I had to flip back and think, oh, they...
Mr. Page.
No, they didn't. Which is all right. It's fine, because they're in Swiss dress and there's a little bit of comic relief. And they turn up, really, to see Haddock and Tintin in the hospital, but they slip on the shiny floor and end up in hospital themselves. And they allow for a little bit of exposition and a recap on what's happened so far. That leads them to... basically, they leave then. But they're walking away from the hospital. Luck would have it, someone throws a cigarette out of a car passing them. It's only the same cigarette brand. Oh. Only the same cigarette brand.
And it's quite a rare cigarette brand.
It is a rare cigarette brand. Not many people smoke it. So they think, right, well, we're going to go to the Bulgarian embassy and we're going to work out what that's all about. We're going to go and spy on the Bulgarian embassy this evening.
That's cool. Are they going to have to wear tuxedos? Is it going to be like True Lies?
They don't. They go by river.
Can we go spying later?
I think it's called stalking if they do it.
Yeah, I've got to go home as well. I've got stuff I've got to do tonight.
Oh.
I've got to iron my wig.
For spying?
No, I've got a meeting tomorrow.
For spying?
Yeah, I'm spying. And
are you in your secret spy disguise? Are you a lady?
Yeah. I'm a very attractive lady.
I'm sure.
It turns out they get there just in time because the sneaky Bordovians have actually captured Calculus and they're about to put him in one of those lovely old mosquito looking old helicopters.
Which mosquito, is nice. Oh, yeah, I know the ones.
But then some. What's the other ones? Not the Bordovians, the. Sildavians, of course.
Sylvanians.
Sildavians.
Mm.
By the whiskers of Gervitas, he says. And the Sildavians have got away with a professor. I know that's how they speak, because I'm watching the Nelvana.
Cartoons.
Yeah. So then Haddock and Tintin chase after the boat with Haddock in. There's a big chase. It's very exciting. Very amusing bit where Haddock gets on the blower, on the radio, to say, oh, we need help, blistering barnacles.
10-4, 10-4, blistering barnacles.
Exactly, 10-4, yeah, that's right. And who's on the other radio? It's
His son, 20 years later.
Amateur radio ham. Jolyon Wagg, who would have thought, and he won't believe that Haddock is trying to get hold of the police. And Haddock's going, look, come on, Jolyon.
Are they in a different country now than where he works?
Well, Jolyon's obviously got a very powerful radio because he presumably is in Geneva, in Belgium. And Tintin and Captain Haddock are in Switzerland, as we've previously established. So, yeah, it's quite a coincidence.
But I hope the film stays true to this realistic
spirit. As I say, you know, and there's that review quite rightly said, they're very realistic Tintin books. Everything in it is absolutely plausible.
I totally believe all of that.
Yeah, I didn't have to suspend disbelief to enjoy that. I did, because it is a very funny scene with Haddock getting increasingly irritated with Wag. And essentially it just allows the conversation allows the helicopter to progress to the point where they land.
Really? So it's like just a pillar
blocking the road to stop that. Don't you knock Hergé's storytelling, which I think you were doing there.
No, I'm just...
Well, you were. They block the road to stop the car. But the car, it don't care. It swerves round and carries on. And at that point, it looks like Tintin and Haddock are somewhat stuck. Until they bump into a friendly Italian man in a sports car.
That seems unlikely.
It does. Who chases
I didn't even know what that means. Sorry, so Jane.
We have some lovely... It's a lovely chasing. They're in with this lunatic Italian. And again, we get a lovely big splash panel where he's driving through the middle of a Swiss village and ends up with a string of sausages on the front of the car, which is kind of delightful. If I was Italian,
for a sausage fest.
I don't know how you feel about this, right? Because this is how the Italian gets out of a ticket from a policeman. He goes, "You barbarian, going through this built-up area at that speed, you'll pay for this. Your name." And the Italian says, "Arturo Benedetto Giovanni Giuseppe Pietro Arcangel Alfredo Caffotti di Milano." And then the policeman says, "Oh well, don't do it again, because you don't want to write down that really long Italian name."
No, that's not how I do it. I just flash them.
You force your headlights into their eyes.
You meant your boobies, didn't you?
I don't
you
know meant your boobies. What's you going meant you on anymore.
You
would
show your boobies to a policeman. That's really naughty. So they carry on. They catch up with the people and they look in the boat. Calculus isn't in there. Tintin's like, oh, that's weird. And the Italian goes mental. He goes, you made a right muppet of me. Because I've checked that only in Italian. And for chasing after them, he drives off in a huff. And Tintin's like, I've been thinking about this.
What the hell accent is that?
It's Tintin accent.
Not Canadian.
I've been thinking about this.
And there's something isn't quite right about it.
Boy, oh.
It's a bit weird. Oh, it was a false seat. I'm such an idiot. He must be in that plane that's over there. So he is, it turns out. But he knows it's fine because he knows
God, it's... he's psychic. It's amazing.
I don't know what's going on anymore.
He knows it's a Sildavian plane, so they make plans to go to Sildavia. But they read the paper and Bedourian fighters forced down a Sildavian plane. So they know by the whiskers of Curvy Tash, they need to go to Borduria, which they do.
Hmm.
Which is good. There's a lovely... there's a lovely scene which is I believe 8 in Flight 714 where Haddock gets some sticking plaster stuck on his nose and it plays out over several panels. Haddock trying to get rid of the sticking plaster and it ended up on someone else and it pays off that it's back on him again as well, which is very funny. Nice bit of sort of comic exposition there.
In this one.
Yeah, which is lovely. It's a much shorter scene in Flight 714. It plays out.
I just saw a familiar name on one of the upcoming pages as well, which has disturbed me.
Really? Oh, Bianca Castafiore.
Yeah.
She's everywhere.
I don't like her.
No, she turns out everywhere. She's the Milanese Nightingale, you know. So they end up in Bordovia and they are assigned 2 agents to keep an eye on them because obviously they don't want Tintin and Haddock to track down Calculus. But being very clever men, they get the agents pissed out of their heads so they can escape, which they do. Turns out that the Bordovians obviously have captured Calculus because they want this technology so they can destroy the West because obviously it's just it apes. Sildavia and Bordovia ape the sort of Eastern Bloc countries of the Cold War period. Bianca Castafiore, you're quite right, is playing over there because she'll take their money. She don't care how corrupt
they
are.
She doesn't care.
She don't care. She'll take their money. But luckily, she hides them from Colonel Spons.
Spons?
Who you may remember from Tintin and the Picaros. Yeah. It's the first time we meet him. Right, this is where it gets confusing. All right.
This is where it gets confusing.
Can I just confirm that agents, yeah? Not Asians.
Agents, that's right.
There weren't 2 Asians assigned to them.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Right. Now, in the inside pocket of Colonel Spons' jacket, which is where Tintin and Haddock are hiding behind this curtain where there's a coat rack, and Bianca Castafiore has put his jacket up like a good hostess. She's hung his jacket up so don't get creased because it's a nice military dress jacket. You wouldn't want him looking like a mug. So it's in front of Tintin and Haddock and he says, we've got this scientist and we want to get some stuff out of him, but I lost the track a little bit because for some reason here we go between his efforts created he'll stay there till he decides to give up the plans. I hope so for his sake. Anyway, I've signed an order for his release in my coat pocket. Tomorrow he'll have to choose. Either he gives us the plans or he'll never be heard of again. Because what he's doing is he's pretending there's going to be a couple of Red Cross people there, and I guess what he's saying is, give me the plans or I'm going to give it to the Red Cross and they'll redistribute you as food aid.
Oh.
What?
That's confusing.
It is a little bit confusing. What? I read it a few
times.
How
did you hear that?
I'll show it to you later. Okay. Anyway, Tintin and Haddock steal the passes he has for the Red Cross people inside his pocket. And they turn up in some glorious disguises at the prison. I don't know how you describe their dress.
So Tintin's turned up as... And Haddock's...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
They look incredible, don't they? And they get Calculus out, and thus starts a chase to the border, which is cool, beautifully drawn. There's so much sort of pace and energy in the panels.
Like it's mad world.
Yeah, it is, only much better. And they're chased by tanks and bikes and all sorts, and there's swapping of vehicles. We even have a panel that almost perfectly apes the front cover as well, which which is unusual. And they end up getting to the border in a tank, and Haddock in his post border crossing moment of hubris decides to light a pipe and blows up a flare. Eventually go back to Marlin's bike where the Wags have moved in. But fortunately, through his own inimitable charm, Haddock manages to get rid of them. And as always, all's well that ends well. Now, it's possible I didn't do that, but justice in my review.
No, it's fine.
It's lovely. It's a very, very dense book. There's lots of reading. It doesn't move too quick. It's paced gorgeously. It is from a period when Hergé's art is absolutely perfect. It's gorgeous, the detail in his panels. And it's one of those books, there's a lot of dialogue in it, but also you just want to drink in each panel. It's absolutely beautiful. His line work was absolutely perfect by this point, almost flawless. It is a lovely, lovely book. It is the closest to a proper detective story you get. In all of the Tintin books. I know for a lot of people, The Calculus Affair is their favourite book. It's certainly one of mine. I absolutely love it.
All the Tintin books are quite delirious, though, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, they're breakneck, but they're meant to be. You know, even the later books, you know, because obviously the early books were newspaper serials, so they had very much had that breakneck pace. But, you know, this was originally published in Tintin magazine and was, you know, based on... It was serialised, essentially, you know, so... It still has that breathless quality to it. You know, it never stops moving. You know, I guess a feature of the later books is they could take time to have a page which is essentially just a comedy piece with Haddock trying to get rid of a bit of sticking plaster, or devote half a page to him brushing his teeth and having the mirror crack. But it's always serving the story as well. Things are always moving forward while they're doing that. It's he's such a accomplished and careful storyteller. Even if sometimes the MacGuffins are somewhat convoluted, you know?
Yeah.
You're laughing. For some reason, you're both captivated by the fact that Captain Haddock had a really old-fashioned bug spray.
It's funny. It
is funny, yeah. It's very much part of Haddock's character, but obviously that pays off when they're in the helicopter and he squirts himself in the face because a mosquito lands on his nose.
I can't find it now, but it looked a bit rude out the corner of my eye.
It's lovely. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
One of my favourite Tintins. There's very few to tell you about now. I think we're probably just going to end on one more book, and then I will start a new series of something.
What are you going to do next?
Well, I may or may not give the listener a choice. I would like to stay with the clear line style, and there is a choice. And I spoke to Jane about this the other day. Either I could start talking about various books that are available through Cinebook at the moment, or I could do a series where, up to a certain point, when I was getting into these books, I read Tintin, I read Asterix. Out of the two, I preferred Asterix, to be honest with you, and read more Asterix books. And up to Asterix and the Magic Carpet, I read all of them. However, I haven't read an Asterix book since that point. I'm aware some have been released. So I can either talk about various random Cinebook books, or I could do a series where I talk about Asterix books what I haven't read yet.
Oh, yes, the listeners should definitely decide. Yeah. I can't decide. I'd like Asterix, but the Cinebook sounds
pretty good. I do like
Asterix,
but I'd quite like...
Yeah.
So what should I do, listener? Cinebook or Asterix what I haven't read yet?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Tell me. Let me know what you think and I'll do what
you decide. Drop us a line.
And we will probably finish our Tintin series by talking about... I'll probably pick up Tintin now if I talk about it, but it's unfinished. I think the only one I haven't really spoken about that I need to is The Crab with the Golden Claws. So the next final Tintin book will be The Crab and the Golden Claws. I'm leaving out the Blue Lotus on purpose because I can't be bothered to dance around racism again. So
no, I mean, there's no need. Been there, done that.
Film comes out next week.
Yeah. And it kind of brings together Crab the Golden Crab of the Golden Claw, Secret Unicorn, Red Rackham's treasure compressed into the Tintin movie.
How excited are you?
I'm quite excited. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you, James.
To be honest with you, I'm looking forward to having a night out in the mill with Nikki, to be honest with you, as much as anything. The film's kind of secondary to that. But...
Thank you, James, as Jane said.
Thank you.
That was good.
I need one more.
No,
I've been doing this since, what, was it about 15 or 16?
It's a long time ago.
Almost 2 years I've been doing it.
With very few breaks.
Very few.
It remains for us to thank... well, it remains for us to thank our contributor. There's been at least one.
Thank you, contributor. I
realised... just now that we have received, you know, a few weeks ago we posted a thing on the Tumblr site about Dark Judgment.
Yeah.
We've actually got, we might be able to have a review of one of those books either next week on the show or in this week because we've been sent some
comments. We should probably talk about it next week almost definitely.
Yes. I just wanted to mention it because it's my fault that I didn't check the email earlier on. So that's cool. That's exciting.
Yeah,
that's
definitely
something to look forward to. Keep talking to us on the internet over the week.
Yes.
Because we're always there. I know you probably will anyway.
And we're really needy.
If you haven't talked to us before, try to make an effort. Don't worry, we are approachable. Probably better off starting with Jane or James, though, because I'm normally like in one form of debate about something.
Yeah, don't even bother following Nick until you're really up to speed with the rest of us, and then maybe sort of easing gently. Go with a Twitter client where you can mute him occasionally or something.
Yeah, that would be good. No, I entirely agree with James. He's covering his face, but I think he's absolutely right. I guess that's it, isn't it? That's us done for another week.
Thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
I'm always out of sync with you guys.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Can't imagine so many monkeys in the Daily Mail, and all of them coming anonymously so they leave no trail. I never thought I'd have an admirer from overseas. Someone has sent me stationery filled with chimpanzees. Some chimps in swimsuits, some chimps are sitting on a vine, some chimps in jackboots, some chimps that wish they could be mine. Starskin Hutch chimps, a chimp who's sitting on the can, a pair of Dutch chimps who send their love from Amsterdam.
I have a postcard with chimpanzees, and everyone is addressed to me. I love a postcard with chimpanzees, and everyone is addressed to me.
If I had to guess, I'd say the monkey sender thinks it's great. He's sending me, maybe she's sending me just to see me get irate. I'm losing sleep, it's gonna be keeping me up all night. I thought it was funny, but now I got money on a monkey fight. Some chimps in hard hats, chimps are working on a chain gang. Love cats, burning rubber in a Mustang. A birthday wishing chimp, a chimp in black like a goth, a going fishing chimp, a British chimp in the bar.
Another postcard with chimpanzees, and everyone is addressed to me. Another postcard with chimpanzees, and everyone is addressed to me.
My home, no matter what, they come and they come, they won't leave me alone. Another monkey in the mail could make me lose my mind, but look at me shoveling through the stack until I finally find some chimps in swimsuits, some chimps in jackboots, some chimps in hard hats, some chimps who love cats. I got the shaved chimps, that's chimps devoid of any hair. I got the brave chimps dressed up in the women's underwear.
Another postcard with chimpanzees, and everyone is addressed to me. Addressed to me. Everyone is addressed to me.
Another postcard with chimpanzees, and everyone is addressed to me. Another postcard with chimpanzees.
to the point of any hair I got to brave chimps. Dressed up in the women's underwear, starts getting Dutch chimps. A chimp who sits down the cab, I got the Dutch chimps. We send their love from Amsterdam, I got chimps on the vine. I got chimps eating lime, I got the birthday wishing chimp. And I got the going fishing chimp.
Spod not appropriate.
Can you please stop saying that word?
What does it mean?
I don't know.
What does Benny mean? Welcome to the 108th Monkey My Back podcast. You are recording, aren't you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh. We straight in. I like it. It's like a fucking ambush introduction. I like that.
We ready?
Yep.
In the room. 3, 2, 1.
Tonight in the pod, we talk about this week's books in spinning orders, discuss the news in... You keep changing.
If only you read it before you read it out loud, you'd know that I tried to make it really fucking readable this
week. Okay, I'll try again.
Have another go.
Tonight in the pod, we talk about this week's books in spinning orders, discuss the news, and James's spotlight Tintin again, this time in The Calculus Affair.
Again, maybe reading it all the way through first would have given you a little bit of a an advantage there. Maybe, do you want one more go at that bit, maybe?
I'll just do all over again.
Oh, wow, good luck. Third time's a charm. Read that bit first, and then it might be such a surprise.
Talk about this week's book in spinning orders, discuss the news, and James spotlights Tintin again, this time in The Calculus Fair. You need a comma after again. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, maybe if you'd read it first, you'd be able to do your own fucking edits, wouldn't you?
Was that the take?
No, I'll do it again.
It's 9 o'clock, I've got to go home.
Chocked full of nuts. What's chocked?
Chocked.
Chocked.
Chock full of nuts.
Chock full of nuts.
Not chocked.
No, chocked full of nuts.
No, it's chock full of nuts.
Chocked. No, it's chocked.
It's chock full of nuts.
No, it's chocked.
Why do you think that? Why would you think a thing like that?
Just fucking read it. That has worked, actually. I feel much more lively.
Oh, why is she touching my boobies? Oh, stop.
We don't have breasts.
That's like abuse.
It wasn't. It was to give you energy. Are you thinking about
boobs? Whoa, very much.
I'm just saying boobs.